So, my name is Jeff Mieliff. I'm a program manager in the Office 365 engineering team. And amongst many, many different areas of the Office 365 products that I work on, I am the program manager for performance and scalability guidance for Exchange for on-premises deployments. And I've been in that role for quite a while. I've been at Microsoft for about 16 years and been very much focused on performance and scalability of our products for the duration of that time. I'll let Nasser introduce himself, and then we'll jump right in.
Hello, everybody. My name is Nasser Ali. I'm an escalation engineer, and I work on Exchange as well as on Office 365. A lot of time, the issues that comes to us are the escalated issues from the customer in terms of performance, in terms of generally in a crisis situation or things that are could be a bug or something that is a very obscure configuration type of issue. So those type of issues we handle.
Okay. So we are going to jump into the session. Just a little bit of housekeeping. If you do have questions, I'm going to try and hold questions until the end. We do have some microphones. There's really no way that I'm going to hear your questions in this room unless you stand up and use one of the mics. There's one over here, one in the middle, and one over here, basically every other row. So if you do have questions towards the end, feel free to get up and grab one of those mics, and we'll answer that for you. So what are we going to talk about today? This is a 300-level session about performance in the Exchange product. We're going to talk about avoiding performance issues. In an ideal world, we don't want you having to troubleshoot performance issues, which is kind of the meat of this talk. So I'm going to spend a few minutes up front going through some general guidance based on the escalations that I see coming into my team and the feedback that I get from our customers about how to avoid performance problems. Some of that may seem a little bit light and fluffy for a 300-level session. I'll try and go as deep as I can on it. But the real meat of the session today is going to be delivered by Nasser, and he's going to go through some case studies and examples of tools that we use internally and that you can use as well to actually understand at a very low level what's happening with performance on your systems and diagnose those issues on your own so that if you do run into problems, ideally you can quickly detect them and also root cause them so you can get back up and running quickly, maybe without a call to Microsoft support. That would be ideal. So in terms of agenda, I'm going to go through the best practices. Nasser's going to talk about tools and techniques and go through a case study for us. So preventing issues. I actually hope that none of the next few slides are a surprise to anyone. I hope that you've all seen this before and are already doing all of these things. But based on the number of escalations that we see and support cases getting opened, I know that it's valuable to go through this anyway. So I'm going to. First of all, always use the calculator. This is my plug for Mr. Ross Smith. Always use the Exchange calculator for sizing. You can go through my very, very long blog post that describes the sizing process for Exchange, and you can perform all those calculations manually, but boy, is it error prone. I'll tell you that in writing that blog article, Ross and I went back and forth, and we both found many, many, many errors that I had made in producing those formulas in the format that's on the blog that I probably wouldn't have caught unless I'd had a very close review from Ross. We went back and forth for quite a while. Just as it's easy to get it wrong with some of those formulas, it's also easy to get it wrong in plugging some of that information into the formulas. So go the easy way. Download the calculator, use it. You'll have a much better experience. I also recommend archiving that calculator, hanging on to it, so that the next time you go to deploy or when you want to add a unit of capacity, scale out, whatever, you have that as a record of the decisions that you made, the choices that you made when you went through the sizing process. Valuable for a couple of reasons. One of them is that you can compare the results of the calculator from when you went through that process for your current deployment and what it shows maybe for the next release of Exchange. I'm not making any guarantees or statements, just to be clear. And you can understand differences, what the calculator is recommending in terms of hardware needs. And that might be very informative. It's also very useful for us if you have a scalability issue or a performance issue that you escalate into Microsoft support. It's very useful for us to be able to look at this to understand if the issue might be related to some assumptions that were made when the system was sized that might no longer be accurate, like the message profile for your users, the number of messages they send and receive per day, or mailbox sizes, those types of things. Very useful to be able to see those choices that were made. So use the calculator, hang on to the results. Absolutely stay on top of updates. In general, newer is going to be better for performance. And there's a very good reason for that. We talk a lot about our engineering investments really being primarily cloud first for Exchange Online, and then some of that engineering goodness flowing back down into our on-premises builds. We have a performance team within Exchange that is very focused, very incented to constantly monitor the performance of our systems in Exchange Online and tune components in Exchange to have to reduce cost. Right? When you think about, I'll use ActiveSync as an example. When you think about the potential for maybe reducing ActiveSync CPU by 1%, doesn't seem like that big of a deal, right? You know, you might have 20, 30 servers, reducing 1% CPU utilization across those servers, not really worth talking about. But when you have 100,000 servers and you talk about reducing ActiveSync CPU by 1%, that's real money. And we can actually take that and equate that with a dollar value. So that team is constantly tuning the product and making improvements around performance. You're going to see those improvements. Not necessarily all of them will impact you, but you will see the result of those improvements in Exchange cumulative updates. So stay on top of those. Also stay on top of .NET framework versions. Not saying go wild and go beyond our supportability guidance. Make sure that what you're deploying is actually supported by Exchange. But we do want you to be on the latest and greatest .NET framework as well. That's a really critical point. We're very, very dependent on the performance of the .NET framework code in order to be performant within Exchange. So I mentioned scalability. I'm going to very briefly talk about it here. We issued some new guidance a while back after Exchange 2013 was released. We got very specific in terms of scalability guidance and said we want you to remain on what we consider mid-range servers, not big, beefy, scale-up machines, but what we consider to be mid-range servers. And when we released that guidance, that was two socket machines, around 24 cores, 96 gigs of RAM. That's what we were using in Exchange Online at the time. And frankly, that's still what we're using in Exchange Online across the vast majority of our machines. And that's why our guidance is still the same. Those are the machines that we are most confident in terms of the behavior of our product from a scalability perspective. I've been very much aware of the pain that many of our customers have gone through when they deployed on larger hardware and had certain workloads within the product. ActiveSync certainly sees this a lot. We've seen it with other workloads as well. Really kind of fall over as a result of running on larger hardware than the product was architected for. So very important to stay on machines of this type. Now, I get that it's hard to buy machines like that. In fact, you may not be able to buy a new server today that looks like that. Totally get that. Frankly, just for the same reason that it's hard for you to buy it, it's hard for us to buy it too. And that means that you will see a change to this at some point, right? I can't make a guarantee of what that time frame will be, but we are actively deploying bigger and better hardware in our data centers, and when we are confident of the product's behavior, of Exchange's behavior on that hardware, we will change the guidance here and give you a little bit of relief. So there's ways to deal with that. Virtualization is one, right? I know we say don't virtualize. How many of you virtualize Exchange? Yeah. Okay. So even though we say it, a lot of people do it. Virtualization is one way to deal with this. You can deploy smaller VMs and take advantage of that scale-up hardware that's easier to purchase. You can also artificially limit the resources that are available on a machine. I don't really recommend doing that. So if you can get hardware that's in this range today, physical hardware, do that. If you can't, virtualizing is an option. Speaking of virtualization, I think I have a grand total of one slide on virtualization. We've gotten to the point that we don't need to you know, spend an entire session talking about virtualization best practices, and I'm really happy about that. We have some great guidance out on the web today, and in general, we're very well aligned with hypervisor vendors on what guidance, what good guidance looks like for Exchange virtualized. So we don't have to go into too much depth, but there are some key points from a performance perspective to keep in mind. Do not overcommit, really anything. Memory is a problem in this area, right? If you use any sort of feature, you know, we've gotten into debates about terminology over the years with some of the hypervisor vendors. I think initially our guidance said, do not use dynamic memory. And others in the industry said, oh, well, our product doesn't have dynamic memory. So you can use, you can take advantage of ballooning and all these other overcommit technologies. Any technology in that space that allows the hypervisor to provide to the VMs running on the physical host more memory than actually exists is badness for Exchange. We do not react well to not having quick availability to the amount of memory that that the VM was sized for. So don't do any sort of memory overcommit. Hyperthreading, absolutely okay for physical hosts that are handling VMs for Exchange. We say very clearly, do not use hyperthreading with Exchange. And when we say that, we're talking about physical deployments. Perfectly fine to turn hyperthreading on the physical host that's handling Exchange VMs. No issue there. The reason that we say no to hyperthreading does not apply in the case of a virtualized deployment. Having said that, we don't want you to oversubscribe CPU. Same reason we don't want you to oversubscribe memory. Exchange is fairly demanding from a CPU perspective. We're trying to get as much out of the hardware as we can, and we need quick access to that CPU. So oversubscribing CPU, really bad for Exchange. We don't react well. That also means sizing properly. So when you are hyperthreading, keep in mind that doesn't mean you're doubling the amount of available CPU capacity on your physical servers, right? Ignore those extra logical cores that show up when you turn hyperthreading on when you're sizing to figure out how much the level of CPU resources on the physical hardware. The last couple slides I want to go through really just are trying to bring home one key point, and that is from an Exchange perspective, when you're trying to get the best performance out of the system, utilize resources as best as you possibly can, and at the same time ensure that the system is reliable, resilient, and providing great end-user experience. Balance is a really, really, really key point. What I mean by that is at every layer in the system, you want to ensure that you're balanced. We do this constantly in Exchange Online, and we want you to do it as well. So thinking about the different layers of the product, and I'm not talking about roles, because obviously we don't have a CAS role anymore in the current version of Exchange, but thinking about the components, we want you to balance at the CAS layer. That means likely having a load balancer in front of those CAS endpoints, ensuring that each of the servers in your deployment is receiving approximately equal amount of workload, right? If you have servers that are receiving drastically more, requests that are hitting those machines are likely not going to be served as fast. You're going to be competing. You're going to have more requests competing for the same resources. Fairly straightforward concept, but just keep that in mind. I do call out a perf counter here. That's an example of a perf counter that you want to be approximately equal across all your machines. You're never going to get it exactly, but good thing to monitor. Within a DAG, we want a well-balanced distribution of active database copies, right? So the best indicator of how much workload a given machine is going to be handling is the number of active database copies. Now, I'm making an assumption there that you actually have a good balance of mailboxes in those databases, and we'll talk about that in a second. But in general, we want to have a good balance of active database copies across all those machines. There's another perf counter to monitor. We want that to be approximately equal across all the machines. So within databases, we also want balance. Now, in Exchange Online, we have the ability to, at a high level, basically say, we're just going to randomly distribute mailboxes across databases. And because we have so many mailboxes, we can as a starting point, get a fairly even distribution of types of users, sizes of mailboxes, those types of things. With a smaller number of users, that becomes more difficult and requires a little bit of planning and may require moving users around on an ongoing basis in order to maintain this balance. But it's worth it. It'll help you avoid running out of, help you avoid space problems, keeping databases approximately the same size, leads to some good management practices. And then even within mailboxes, you can also balance things a little bit. So we used to talk years ago about high item count folders and problems with clients and running into perf problems when you had these massive folders and massive mailboxes. Not so much these days. We've done a lot of work to improve that over the last few releases. Having said that, you can still run into problems with older clients. We make an assumption that everyone's on the latest and greatest Outlook client. I realize that's actually pretty rare. I live in a world at Microsoft where we're always on the latest and greatest, but that's very much not what the vast majority of our customers experience on a daily basis. So it's still worth thinking about high item count folders. Office 365 actually imposes some limits on the shape of a mailbox. It's the way we refer to it, where we actually impose some maximum item counts for certain folders. You can do the same thing for your users. By default, in the on-premises product, all of those quotas are actually turned off. There's no enforced quota. But you can take a look at the limits that we publish for Exchange Online. And all these slides have little URLs in the corner where you can go get more info. And use set mailbox to actually impose the same quotas. I recommend that as a best practice. We have a lot of flexibility in Exchange Online to manage mailboxes of different sizes and shapes. So the quotas aren't really onerous, per se. But in terms of keeping things healthy and happy, they're a great way to go. So in summary, before we move on to the next section, absolutely use the right tools for the job. The calculator is the key one to point out. You'll have a much better experience with Exchange if you go through the sizing process correctly using the calculator. Stay up to date. Latest and greatest, in general, is going to be the best in terms of the performance of the product. Don't go too big. Don't go too small in terms of sizing. I don't often see people deploying too little hardware these days. More of the problems that I see are on the other side with machines that are too big. But you can run into problems on both ends. So size carefully and deploy the hardware that's recommended by the sizing process, and then keep things balanced. That's really key to a healthy, happy system. So with that, I'll hand it over to Nasser.
Thank you, Jeff. So what Jeff covered was what is the best practices are, how we do things in Office 365. What I'm going to follow up on that is what happens when these general practices are not followed, what type of cases that we're getting in support, and how do we troubleshoot those things, how we debug. So basically, it breaks down into the two sections. The first one is basically how do you detect the performance issues. And the second portion is a couple of case studies that I will show you when we collect the data from you, when we ask you to provide the logs, when we ask you to provide you the proc dumps and dumps of the processes and things like that. What do we actually do with the data? So I want to show you some of the ways we look into those data and troubleshoot and analyze and kind of give you some ideas that when you encounter those type of issue, how you can look into some of those things by yourselves and can figure out or narrow it down the problem to another layer, to figure out where the problem is. So that's what we're going to cover. Along with that, I have some huge disks. These are 1024 megabyte disks here. I guess you can use with your Raspberry Pi to run an Exchange server. But these are available, and when we have the Q&A session, if you have a good question to ask, we'll pass it one to you. This one has some content, some book from Tony Redman in there, and it has some great information. You can always give it out to somebody in your office as well. So let's get it started. So common causes of performance issue. Show of hand, how many of you are on 2010? Okay. Great. How many on 2013 and 2016? Okay. So a lot of things that I'm going to cover here are 2013 and 2016 related, but some of them are applicable to 2010 as well. But a lot of things that you're going to see is related to how 2013 and 2016 and the performance issues looks like, you know. So what we have seen in generally in performance issues, number one issue that we have seen is that cumulative updates version, you know. When you look into the cumulative updates, these are quarterly release. Every 3 months, there is a quarterly release of a cumulative update. We just released on September 20th. So you're looking into 4 cumulative updates per year. And the best practice is that you stay within the last 2. So right now, we release CU14. So CU14 and CU13 are the 2 that we want our customers to be installing. Same thing goes with 2016 as well, CU3. So a lot of time what we have seen is that there may be known issues and customer may be running on an old cumulative update because of many reasons, you know. Maybe the application that they're using is not supported or not tested on the new cumulative update by the vendor. Some of the other things, you know, those type of things. But this is one of the things that we have seen where the cumulative update or not having the latest cumulative update could be an issue. .NET Framework version. .NET Framework version is a really, really important. It's just like it's a key ingredient for Exchange to run. And we lot of component in Exchange basically depend on .NET Framework version. There are some issues in the earlier versions. There was some performance issues, high CPU, contentions issues, and things like that. A lot of them are, fixed. And now we have a version available which is called 4.6.1 that is supported or should be applied with Exchange CU13 as well as Exchange 2016 CU3. There is another version, 4.6.2, that came out as well, and that's basically is applicable to anybody that is applying Exchange 2016 CU3 on Windows Server 2016. So these are important to keep up to date with the .NET framework. But make sure that you just don't go to the latest framework update. Look into the eHello, look into the supportability metrics to make sure that the version of .NET framework that you're applying is the one that is tested and approved by the Exchange product team. Okay? Third one is power management. This is one of the issues that we have seen is that the performance issue comes in and it turns out that the customer is using a power management where it is not really using all the powers, you know. It's basically down to, you know, like 60% of the CPU network and things like that. It may be saving you power, but it may be causing a lot of grief and hours in terms of troubleshooting those type of issues. So power management is the other area where you find that customer has not set it up correctly, and because of that, they're having performance issues. Sizing and load distribution is another one. Jeff covered some of the stuff in the sizing in terms of how do you really size it. How many of you have a huge server, say 48 cores? Anybody running a Exchange server with 48 core? You running it? Okay. Okay, how about 256 gig of memory? Okay, that's good. You guys are in good shape. Very good. Okay. And the scale-up thing that we talked about earlier, you know. So these are generally the areas that we have seen common causes of performance issue. Now, I covered some of the stuff earlier when I talked about the .NET Framework version, and you can go and look into it. What I suggest when you look into your environment at this point and you are on CU13 or CU14, go ahead and apply 4.6.1. If that you cannot apply, then 4.5.2 is the minimal, you know, like it's the bottom thing that you have to have, you know. So 4.6.1 is what we want you with the latest CUs. But if you cannot go there, then 4.5.2 is the one that is recommended at this point. So if you don't have those latest framework, what type of issues we have seen? And as I said earlier, the issues that we have seen in those type of scenario is high CPUs, contentions within some of the processes, failovers, a lot of those different symptoms that we have seen when you don't have those framework versions, you know. Power management. Here's the power management thing that we talked about earlier, and it is applicable to the 2010, 13, and 16. Basically, what you're looking into is that is if you have the power management not set up, you are basically throttling the CPU and NIC. And generally what happens is that you will see something like this that's shown in the graph, you know. Notice that it's going up and down, and it is at 60% sometimes, you know. What we really want is that you want to make sure that you are at 100% of the CPU, you know. There's a performance counter that you can look. You can look into the maximum frequency there, and this is the performance counter. that you can look to make sure that your power management is correct. If the power management is not correct, and you're running your servers in this type of situation, you may not see the issue immediately, but when you start putting load on those servers, adding more users, or the user profile got changed, you will start seeing some of the problem, you know. So make sure that you have the power management set up correctly. Solution is simply very easy, both on the virtualized machine as well as on the physical. And you can look into to see how you set it up. You know, there's a documentation out there. There's a couple of blogs that are put out there that basically talk about that. And I have shown here the screenshot that you will see. And this is basically what you want to see is this particular way to set up as a high performance in there. Okay, so troubleshooting sizing is also one of the things that we have encountered in terms of, you know, what is the right size supposed to be, you know, in terms of, you know, your mailbox sizes and stuff like that. A lot of time what we have seen the sizing issue comes in is that initially the design was done for maybe 500 users and then it ended up for 1,000 users, you know. So a lot of time what happened is that, you know, maybe initial design was really good in terms of managing the load, managing the size, but what happened is that over the period of time, your user profile has changed. You start using more mails. They start bringing more devices, or, you know, they have multiple devices now, or you know, something has changed. Attachment size has changed, or, you know, your organization, or, you know, you're starting more mail and things like that, you know. So these are some of the things that we have seen. And generally, you know, there's a really great article by the Perf guy, by the way, which is also Jeff Mailoff. Jeff Mailoff goes by the Perf guy. So there is a great blog on how do you do the math, and it will basically tell you in terms of whether you are under capacity or not, you know, in terms of CPU cycles and things like that, you know. And you can look into those things and figure out what are the issues looks like, you know. How many of you use the calculator, the exchange calculator? Okay. How many of you use it on a regular basis to figure out whether a calculator is showing you the right information in terms of your existing loads? Right, so this is a good practice. If you're a large environment, it's not just one time you use and then you move on. If you have a large environment, you want to periodically go and check, basically take the pulse of your organization to figure out what it is looks like in terms of, you know, the load and sizing and things like that, you know. So this is great information out there. Okay, garbage collection. One of the things that, how many of you know what is the garbage collection is? And that's not about the garbage collection that we collect out of the house. It's from the .NET framework. Everybody know what a garbage collection looks like? Okay. Pop quiz, what type of garbage collections are out there? There's two types. Server, what is the other one? Anybody, any volunteer? It's a workstation. So there's two type of garbage collections, workstation and server. And what generally happens is that in terms of, and I can go, it's like in another hour of talk about how the garbage collection runs. So I will just go into the little bit detail here to show you if you suspecting that there's an issue with the garbage collection, then how to detect it, you know. So basically, here it is, the two counters that you should see. Now in Exchange, all of the, or majority of the processes use the workstation garbage collection that keep the process size small and contained. And that's basically how the Office 365 works. And as we talked earlier, the 24 core, 96 gig of memory that we use, it's really contained these processes within that memory footprint and the processes. And a lot of time what happened is that you can end up in a situation where you have a large machine with a lot of memory and a lot of CPUs, and you can start seeing some contention issues, you know, and there's a reason for that why you're seeing these contention issues, you know. But when you're troubleshooting and you suspect that there is an issue with the memory in terms of when you're looking into connect, disconnect, high CPUs and things like that, look into these two counters and look into these things, you know, in terms of allocated bytes and times in GC. And if that is somewhere in that area, then there's a red flag. There's something going on in your server, and we need to figure out what it is. You know, generally, these type of things happen when it is overloaded in terms of what it is doing. You know, so this is a couple of things that you can look by yourself to figure out. You know, the tendency is that when you start seeing those type of issues, that okay, can we change from workstation GC to server GC? And the question is that why we want to change it, you know, because basically when you change from a workstation GC to server GC, you're going to change the way the processes behave, you know. In Workstation GC, there is a memory footprint and threads that are kind of contained because the process size is small. When you go to the server GC, you're basically creating a thread and a managed heap per process, you know, per core, actually. So it increases your size. So say, for example, a process that you generally see as 2 gigabytes of memory, you might see as a 20 gigabyte of memory, you know. And it might cause some other problem. So it is not recommended or not, you should not be doing it unless you talk with the Microsoft support and we talk with the engineering group and say, okay, this is the situation, this is the data we collected, what are the recommendations in some cases? So in some cases, we do go and suggest to the customer to go and change to the server GC, but it is basically a very, very limited workaround, you know. We generally don't want customers to do this, you know. So as I said, should be a troubleshooting step and not a solution, you know. All right. So what I want to show you is basically switch to the machine and show you a demo of a health script, and then I will go to the case studies. Basically, what I want to show you is that there is some health script that is done by a colleague of mine called Mark Nivens. And let me switch the machine. And basically, what it does is that it will show you some of the information in terms of what it is. So let's see if it... okay, great. Anybody can see the screen? So this is basically a very low-end machine. And... okay. And what I'm going to do is that I can, as you can see, is that here, there's a lot of stuff going on here. And I'll switch to PowerShell. And basically, I'm trying to run the script to see what's going on here. It looks like there's some issues going on with the machines. Let me just go to the screen and just show you what it looks like, you know. So when you run a health script, basically, and this is available on the script center, you can download the script. There's a PowerShell script. You can actually look into it to what it is. Basically, what it does is that it looks into the common things that we have seen in the past, you know, in terms of issues, in terms of things which are causing the problem, you know. So when you look into this one and when you run the script, it's basically show you the information, what it has actually tested, you know, in terms of information on what is running. So if it is running on the Hyper-V, it will show you that it is Hyper-V. So you can see that, you know, it is in the Hyper-V. It also shows you what is the size of the memory looks like, what is the page file looks like, what version of .NET framework you have, whether the power plants is balanced or not, how much memory do you have, how many cores do you have, what is the mega cycles per core you have. So when you are looking into machines and you figure out, okay, well, there may be a performance type of issue that you're seeing, run that health check script. It kind of covers some of the things that we have done that we do ourselves, basically, to make sure that the customers are in that particular supported scenario, you know. So you go ahead and look into all of those different things, you know, and kind of look into all of those different things. One of the things that it will detect is basically looking into to find out what is the cumulative update you have. If you are on like CU6 or CU7 and things like that, it will show up as a red. It will also show up in a red if you have the power management plan is not good, you know. So highly recommended that you use it. It's fairly easy, should be in your toolbox, something that we use ourselves on a daily basis in terms of performance issues. And just look for those on the health script center. Okay. Okay, good. So at least it is working, doing something. Okay, so one of the things that I want to show you is now, I'm going to switch back to the presentation and kind of go over the two case studies that we have. I think we have enough time to kind of look through the case study and figure out and show you what we actually did to figure out what it is, you know. So this, in this particular case study, and I'm pretty sure you guys have seen it, is that you have random connectivity issue for your clients and happens throughout the day. So you cannot pinpoint when it's happening. Your end users are complaining about it that, okay, well, you know, when I try to connect, sometimes I get connected, sometimes I do not connect it, different type of device. So user experience is really bad, basically, you know. I mean, they're not having a good time on email. So how, when those type of issue comes in, what type of things that we look into, what type of data that we collect, and how do we analyze that data, you know? So let's take a look into that. So this is basically the symptoms that the customer comes and told us. Obviously, you call somebody, they start working with you, finding the version numbers and all of those stuff. But the gist of this is that the customer is saying that it is a high CPU utilization. They have a load balancer, F5, or could be anything, you know, that they want to use, and that go periodically run the probes to see how the CAS are performing in terms of health. And they're saying then that that monitoring software coming back and telling them the health check is failing or it is too high, and or, you know, it is kind of, you know, because of it is too high, it is basically taking the connection from one CAS server to the other CAS server, you know. So how do we analyze the data and solve the issue? Okay. So what data is needed? In your case, when you start looking to this data, all of this data is actually available. In Exchange 2013 and 2016, a lot of data is collected by default. You don't have to go and enable certain things, you know. So it's performance data, logs, all of those stuff is already available. Basically, what we wanted is topology information to understand what type of topology customer is running. Is it multiple sites? How the load balancer is connecting the backends or the CAS servers? And those type of issues, what type of clients you have. So topology information, basically, help us understand the scenario and the architecture. Health check script. This is the health check script that I showed you earlier. So we want to look into those things to make sure that the common denominator is gone. The low-hanging fruit are taken care of, you know, because this is something that we look to see, okay, what is the power management, what it is, you know. So we want to take a look into that one. We want to look into the daily performance log. So when a customer comes in and say, I have a high CPU issue, it really doesn't tell us much, right? We got to collect the data in terms of the performance log. There's a daily performance logs that get collected on all Exchange servers. We can look into those. Sometimes support will ask you to collect some additional counters based on what we think would be the problem. In those cases, you run a certain functionality, a certain utilities to collect information. So we look into those, and then RCA log. This is RCA log is basically your RPC client access service log, you know. In this particular case, we collected the RCA log. In other scenarios, we may ask for the IIS log. We may ask for some other logs that are under Exchange 2013 and 2016. I mean, there is tons of logging. If there is anything that is big difference between 2010 and 2013 is the amount of logging that Exchange generate. Huge, huge amount of information that is already there for you. Of course, with all that information, we have to analyze it, but the information our majority of time is available and there, so you don't have to enable anything or set it up or wait for a repro. It's already there collected for you. And system and application log. I mean, a lot of time we overlook system and application log. Sometimes there's a key information sitting there in the system and application log, and that's where we look into the information, you know. So once we have all this data, then we start the data analysis piece. So what is the first thing we're going to do, you know? So we know that it's a two multi-role servers with a level 4 load balancer in the front. And this particular side is the only side that is exhibiting the problem. Other sites are not showing this problem, so we focus on this particular site. Customer provided the health check HTM, which is basically their load balancer output in terms of what it is showing. So this is basically the load balancer. This is not Exchange data. This is the load balancer data that is coming in. And notice that there's the spikes in here, and there's time. So there's two correlations that we can see. There's two servers. One is showing the red line. The other one is showing with the green line. And both of them are showing spikes in terms of, you know, when the load balancer is telling them there's a performance issue in terms of getting the response from the CAS servers. So you can see that the RPC health checks are kind of failing during that time. Okay. So we know that the RPC health check is failing. There's a spike right there, and there's a timing. So this gives us two key pieces of information. It gives us that there's an issue with the RPC health check. So we know that the process that on the back end that we need to look into is the RPC client access service. And from the time, we know that there's a certain time when the problem is happening. These two pieces of information will help us analyze it further when we start looking into the logs to figure out what it is actually happening. Now keep in mind, at this point, we have no idea which particular process is taking the memory, but we know that it has something to do with the RPC health checks. Okay? So where to start? If anybody has looked into the performance data, if there is anything, it's just too many counters. Unless you know what you're looking for, it's just a tons of information that is out there, a lot of information that we need to look into, we need to process. And sometimes what happens is that we get lost. It's basically looking for a needle in a haystack. You know? And the key information that you have to figure out is the timing when the problem happened and which particular process that seems to be issue that causing the high CPU. So I'm going to switch here. So you can look into here. There's performance analysis. We start looking into the CPU. And I'm kind of narrowing it down to show you that, okay, what are the things that we're seeing here? So you can see that there's a high CPU, and then there's the two processes that are basically showing the high CPU. Both are, these are W3WP process. And W3WP process is a special process. These are the one that is initiated by the IIS. And we kind of running exchange processes within those W3WP. So if you just look into the process name, it show you as W3WP, but you can go back and look into the process ID. And based on that, you can combine it and make sure that it is which process it is. You know, it's a backend, it is a PowerShell, it is what it is, you know. So you start here. Of course, there's a tip here. In this particular case, I set it up to 1800. Anybody guess why would I set it up to 1800 on the graph? Okay. So there's 18 core in this particular process. So I set the graph to 18 to kind of scale it the way, make it easier for the eye to look into it, to figure out, okay, well, is the 18 core, 100% going on all the 18 cores, but almost four is taken by one process and three is taken by other process. So you kind of split to figure out what it is happening in this particular way, you know. Give you a good visualization when you're looking into your performance analysis. It's a good way to scale it based on, if you're looking into the CPU, scale it based on the number of cores you have, so it kind of give you some idea, okay? So that's here, and you can see that here, you know, W3WP 9 and 12. 9 and 12 are the process. At a time, we don't know what is 9 and 12 are, you know. Again, the key piece of information, the two processes that are taking the highest consumer of the CPU, and also the time of the issue. So now we know, kind of narrowing it down to the processes which are taking the high CPU. The question that comes to mind is why these processes are busy. They were not busy 5 minutes ago. They're not busy in the morning. They're not busy like 2 hours ago. Why they're busy now? And that's the piece of information we need to figure out to understand why happening in this particular case. And I have some counters here to show you what it is. But basically, there's a way you can look into the W3WP and the process ID and kind of map it to exchange process, you know. And it's, I'll show you here in a minute, you know. But basically, what you're showing here is in the bottom. And you can see here, in fact, let me just show and go to the demo machine here. It's 5, right? Okay. Wow. And just bring this guy here up. So this is a pre-noted one I have here. It's a little bit different than the slide that you're seeing, but what you're seeing here is all of the different things that we have, you know. So you can see here is that this is your processes that we talked about earlier, and there are different things, you know. So a couple of things that you notice that I have added. I have added a counter called database mounted. database mounted is a counter that shows you how many database are active database on this particular server. You know, sometimes what happens is that thinking is that, okay, well, if there's a failover happen or something happened, there are more connection comes to this particular node, and that may be the reason it is showing this difficulty. So it's basically because of the number of database that gone up. So database mounted is a counter that you want to look. You also want to look into the different things that you're seeing here. The thread count is another good indication of what how many threads are available into that particular. But the key things that you're looking into is basically the connection attempts, the action request that's coming in. And you can see that here, that the request that is coming in, active request that is coming in, it comes, and then there is an abrupt drop here. OK? Everybody notice that the drop here? So there's a drop in the active request, and that's basically coming in from the RPC proxy app pool. So RPC proxy app pool is the pool, front pool, that's everything get connected, you know, and then goes to the back end. And then you can also look into the front end, and it's kind of showing the similar kind of, you know, some activity in terms of requests per second coming in. Active request, and then you can look into active request on both of these things. Connection attempted per second and connection attempted to the back end. You can see that it's gone up as well. The other piece that you want to look into is basically RPC operations per second. Now, RPC operations per second is an important counter if you want to find out if there's a contention at the RPC level, in the RPC client access service. What you want to couple that particular counter is with RPC average latency. So you can see that the RPC average latency has gone up in this particular case, but RPC operations is gone down per, you know, here. So what basically this tells us is that it's not really an RPC contention issue, because if that's the scenario, then you will see the operation and the latency basically, you know, both goes up actually. So let me switch back to the slides here, so I can give you a little bit more information. So that's what it looks like. Now, after analyzing this performance data, we got some key information here. We can see that the active request has gone up. We can see the request per second gone up. And, you know, some of the key information that we collected from here. This seems like there's a number of connections that came in at a time to that particular server. And that may be the reason you were seeing the high CPU. All of a sudden, you got a huge flood of connection requests comes in. Now the question is that where these connection requests are coming from, and why would somebody send the connection request here? So why the connection flood? So now you're looking into the hypothetical issues. Okay, well, is this a database failure? Well, no, because the database, no change in the database mounted, right? So we know that it does not cause this one. Is a new client connecting? And we can look into, there's a drop in the new active request, you know? So it's not really a new client's connecting, you know? A type of scenario. RPC latency issues, we talked about this earlier. It doesn't look like an RPC latency issue based on the two counters that I showed you earlier, the latency and the ops. So what it is? So what it is that's causing the problem, and where do we look next? We already looked into the performance data. So next piece of information that you want to look into is your RPC client access log, you know, to find out what are the information that's coming in and who's sending that information and why that information is coming. So basically what you want to look into is look into a tool which is called the Log Analyzer. I have it here. Let me just switch back. Oh, okay. Let's see if I can go back. So, Log Parser Studio, created by my good friend Kerry. And you basically, there's already a lot of built-in reports in there, you know, and you can, you know, load the information and see what it is. And basically you can load here the information that you want. I already have selected some of the log files. These are the log files that I collected from there. And then you can select the queries that you want, you know. So we want to have the connection query. There's a built-in query. And I want to look into basically let's look into request collector. Not the app pool, but let's clear out the search. Oh. Okay. Connection. So you can see that there's a lot of stuff available here. And what I want to find out is, connect and disconnect. So let's say disconnect. Okay. So there's RSPCA, connect, disconnect reports. And it has a default interval of 10 seconds. So I go on that one. And you can see that the query is right there. And it's showing you what the query looks like. You can run the query, and it's going to process it and come back. And it will show you the information. The way it is collecting this thing, you can also take the information that is available here and kind of look into the Excel, the output from the RPC client access log. And if I look, this is a pivot chart that I created basically based on the connection and disconnections. And you can see that there's information there that shows you what it looks like. And I can see here there are certain times where there's a really high spike that's showing up. And if I just go over that thing, I can see that the connection around 921 was 2445. And then there was another come in here that shows it. So basically kind of give me idea that there is a connection flood that is coming to this particular server. And that's causing this high CPU because you have to do all the processing. Now, if you are a visual person, you can also use Power BI. So let me go back to the Log Parser Studio. You can see it here. One of the key things from the Log Parser Studio is that you can take this particular query and create a new one. And and basically change the times and things like that associated. So if I have 10 seconds, if I want to change it to 60 seconds, I can change and run the query again. So let's go back and so that was the Excel that I showed you. I also created Power BI based on this data, okay? So if you are a visual person and you want to see what it looks like, you can also look into the Power BI. So in this particular case, this is basically a visualization just showing you all the disconnects. And you can see that the disconnects are 207, 174, and things like that. Now, if I go and select both of just the connect, you can see that the connect at that time is 244, 45. So basically what it's giving you is giving you a tree map as well as a bar graph that's showing you what it looks like. You know, so if you're a visual person, you can take your content and basically use the Power BI to generate some visual reports for you to actually see what it looks like and make it easier for you to analyze some of the data. If I select both of them, basically all of them, there's some issues going on here. But I just wanted to show you that you can also use Power BI to analyze some of the data. So, okay, from all this information, the things that comes to mind is that, okay, well, we know that what the issue is. We have seen the reason for it to go up. And so what is next? How do we figure out what's going on in here? So we review the LBS log. From there, we figure out that, okay, well, there's something going on the LBS log. So at that time, when we figure out that there's a connection flood coming in, we went back to the customer. We said there has to be some logging created by your load balancer. Can we look into that load balancer at the time when the problem happened to see what the load balancer was doing at that time? And what we find out is this two lines, basically, there somewhere. And the key information in these two lines is basically is that very famous out of memory. Okay? So out of memory is generally a situation that happens when a process runs out of the memory. In a high availability situations that we have, as well as other processes, this one is running Linux, but other processes as well, when you run out of the high memory process, the fastest way to recover is to kill that process, right? It's to release that memory and things like that. So basically what's happening in this particular case, based on the logs that you see, is that the process VSSL proxy basically got the, you know, out of memory, and the OS on the load balancer decided to sacrifice that child, okay? Obviously, this is not a real child, so, you know, this is just a process child. And once that happened, what happened is generally is that, of course, that part that was holding all the connections and things like that, and when that process get killed in the load balancer, it has to do something with, so, you know, you got to restart the process, and by the time when we're restarting the process, those connections that you have on this particular machine has to go somewhere else. And that's where the connection flood is coming from, you know. So what was the solution in this particular case? So analyze showed high CPU, large number of connection, confirmed the number of connection, no database failure, no RPC contention issue. Load balancer file shows the killing of the solution in this particular case based on all of those things that we did in the analysis is basically to work with the load balancer vendor to figure out why this particular situation is happening. And if there is a known solution, maybe there is a firmware solution available from the load balancer vendor, or there is something else available. And it turns out that by just putting more memory, it will fix the problem. So in this particular case, customer basically got a new load balancer with more memory, and that taken care of their problem. They did not see the problem again. They have not called back since then. So that was one of the issues that, and this one was on 2013. So I got 17 minutes. I want to show you a 2016 situation now. How many of you were on 2016? Show of hand. Okay. So on 2016, customer was testing out some exchange, actually, 2016. And they applied. So this is basically a test case that came to us. It happened into the production as well, but the information that I have is from the test case. So the customer says, okay, well, after I applied the CU1, I cannot search anymore. You know, all the mailboxes that I have, the test mailboxes, there are not many. It's like maybe 10 or 20 mailboxes, and I cannot search anymore. So I tried to uninstall the CU, and I cannot uninstall the CU as well, because that's generally the customer mind was that I uninstall the CU, and it will take care of the problem, because the thing happened with the CU. Well, unfortunately, you cannot uninstall the CU. So now we are in a situation where a key functionality of the clients is down, which is basically search. And we don't know what is change in CU1 that caused the problem. So we start looking into this particular thing. So these are the symptoms that we've seen. What we've seen is that high CPU utilization, we saw that end user cannot search. And one of the things that come out of these things after looking into the application log was that one of the node runner process continues to crash. Now, if you have looked into the 2013 and 2016, there are four node runner processes that are doing different things, right? These are independent node runner processes, so we don't know which functionality is causing what. So how do we analyze and solve the issue? Let's see if I can go back to repro machine. Come on. Okay. And so this one is basically a machine that I set it up to repro the problem. And so I run the test exchange search, and basically it will come back and tell me, you know, creating a session and running the test. So why it is running the test search, and I can show you what is the database status looks like when you run the test exchange search, is that we figure out, okay, well, there is something wrong with this particular machine, you know, because the customer was telling it's only happening on this particular machine. That was a great scenario to troubleshoot, because you have a machine that is working and a machine that is not working, and they're exactly the same. They both have CU1. They both were in the customer environment, same AD forest, same site. Nothing is different between these two machines except for the hardware, you know, in this particular scenario. So we run the test exchange search to figure out what's going on.
Also, we start looking into the application log, and I have another one. Yes, let me just go back to the. So let me just exit out of this thing. It's going to load up wrong. Let's go back here. So it's still going on, but we can look into the application log here on this particular machine that is reproing. So now I look into the application log. This thing has lag. I think I will just go back to the slides. I have a repro of the crash, actually, so I wanted to show you what it looks like, you know. So what data was needed? So, and I don't have time to fiddle with the with the repro here, so let me just go over the slides so I can show you. But we can talk about it, you know, if you want to look into the more detail. So again, what data is needed? Here's the information that we needed from the customer. And basically, once that information is provided, same thing, how do we analyze the data? So the first thing that we start looking into is that application log, because customer was telling me that there is some events, you know. So how many of you know that there is an event that is 4999, which is a Dr. Watson event? And we look into that event. That event is your friend. If you start seeing that event in your application log, there's something going on, because it does provide a lot of information in terms of what it is that it's trying to tell you. And in this particular case, if you look into the highlighted area, it is showing you certain key information, right? It is showing you a process ID, which is 12.12.268 in this particular case. It is showing you the version of Exchange that it is running. It is showing you some information about where it is actually crashed, and it is also showing you what is the node runner node that is crashed. So if you look into it, it is node runner node number one, and it is an index node one. So that's the node runner process that is used to index the basically databases, you know. Go back. Still not come back, I guess. Yeah. Okay. So from there, we got some key information. We know that what this looks like. This is what it looks like when we go to the run the test exchange search, okay? Basically, it is showing you that, you know, it's not available, you know, could not build it or whatever. So basically, it is down. Search is down. Your mail flow, your connectivity, everything is up. It's only the search functionality that is broken at that point. Okay? So we know that what this looks like in here. This is your another key information. So starting with the application log, as I showed you in the 499, you can extract some of the key information from there. Once you get that key information from there, generally what happens is that if it's a support escalation engineer or escalation engineer, they will try to look into internal KBs, internal bug checks, and try to figure out if this is a known issue or is this something that has just started happening, you know. So in this particular case, it turns out that, you know, it was not really a known issue, but we need to figure out what it is. So it got escalated to an EE. And then we start looking into the more details. We have access to the source code and things like that, so we start looking into those things, you know. So there's a couple of other things that I want to show you here is that you also want to look into associated 1000 and 1026 event as well. So when you see 499, along with those, there's some other events that get logged by the search. And I just want to show you what it is, you know. So you look into the 1000 event. 1000 event has some additional information that was not into the 499. If you notice that it is giving you the folding information, but it is also giving you some additional information, which is basically the exception code. In this case, the exception code is 1D at the end. So what does that exception code mean? There's a utility called error that you can use to convert those exception code to a human understandable information. And that what it is telling us that when we convert is that illegal instruction, okay? So for some reason, that process crashed because it encountered an illegal instruction. So the key here is that, well, why did it encounter an illegal exception here, you know? What is different between this machine and the other machine, which is not encountering this particular illegal instruction, but we encountering this illegal instruction, you know? So we took that information and we start comparing the working and non-working system. When we start comparing the thing, we find out that in the working case, it has a CPU family that was different from the CPU family that was in the non-working case. Okay? So there's a particular CPU family, you can see that. You can get that information from PowerShell or you can get it, you know, from your system. And that's a key information in this particular case because it is telling us what is the difference between these two machines are, actually. So everything looks same. So we asked this customer, from where you got this machine? This machine looks to be pretty old. And he says, well, I wanted to test something, so this was sitting into the storage. I just bring it out and, you know, start installing Exchange on it. Everything installed fine, and I can test it out. And everything was working fine till I installed CU1. So there's nothing wrong with the machine. There's something wrong with the CU1. Okay, so that was a discussion. Now we are thinking, is there something wrong with the machine, or is there something that got added into the CU1 that's causing the problem? So to get further analysis, we say, okay, let's get a process dump, you know, the faulting process. You know, this is something that a escalation engineer, support escalation engineer might ask you. They provide you a proc dump and then, you know, list of switches that you have to use to generate a dump, which is basically the state of the process at the time in memory. And we get that information and we kind of analyze it to understand what it is that's causing the problem, you know. So when we got that information, we basically look into the process to figure out what it is. And the illegal instruction was actually coming in at the popcnt. So we say, okay, well, why popcnt is an illegal instruction on this particular processor? So the first thing that we do is we search, and we search on Bing and Google to make sure that we're getting the right information from both the sources. You can search wherever you want. And what we find out is really interesting. What we find out is that this particular instruction is not really supported on this particular set of CPUs. So if you look into the Intel instruction code, basically, which is the list of instructions that you can call on a particular CPU, the assembly instruction, this popcnt is not there. And it is not supported. So we said, why we are calling this particular popcnt in there? So of course, we went and looked into the Mark's tool, you know, Mark Rusnovich tools, to find out, you know, is this particular instruction supported? And you can see that that graphic in the bottom that show you that, okay, what it is. And it turns out that, yeah, it is not supported, man, in this particular CPU. So we went back and started looking into the code, and we talked with the engineering team. And it turns out that in CU1, we basically added some new code that specifically called that particular instruction. And a lot of searches basically is C++ and those type of things. So within the search, it's an optimization. You can call some assembly code to make sure that it runs faster, basically, right? Fast, you know? So what happened in this particular case is that instruction got added. And that particular old machine, I guess we don't have it. A lot of the customer did not have it, but there was we still got quite a bit of cases that there where the customer was running this type of hardware. So what we find out that you know, high CPU caused by the Watson crashes, failed on a certain hardware, only happened after supplying. Debugging shows illegal instruction, and the solution was basically after we open a bug with the engineering team. And basically provided them all this information and kind of repro also in Microsoft Lab because we have the similar hardware. So we said, okay, let's try to repro the problem in a similar hardware and see what it is. And we got a solution that got fixed in CU2. The CU2 was within a week releasing when this issue comes out. So we were able to put the information into the CU2 and provide it fixed to the customer within weeks, actually. That's how the code change was taken into the account of the CPU family and all this stuff. I cannot show you the code change, but that was the whole from problem analysis to the solution and things like that. Now, I had a demo here with the thing actually crashing because I found hardware in our lab that goes through, and it's really it's not working here because connectivity issue or whatever, you know. It was working in my room fine. So there's something going on here. But if you have any additional question on this thing, we can talk in the booth as well. Q&A.
Yep, right down in the middle. Thank you.
Well, okay, I asked this question to other exchange consultants, and well, this is all fine and dandy when you have trails of problems, a little trail that you can follow. Mm-hmm. But what about that little issue when there's a black hole? You know there's a problem, but you can't seem to find any trace as to pinpoint what the problem is. One of the situations that I came across recently was when we were emulating a public folder migration from an Exchange 2010 to 2013. We eliminated network problems, firewalls. We even placed the 2013 on the same network, and the problem seemed to persist. The problem is as simple as a migration didn't utilize not even up to 10 to 20% of the bandwidth. There was a lot of waits. We've done everything. We've tried to tweak it. We tried to do everything that there is possible in order to make this session go a little faster, and nobody became any wiser. How would you propose for us to troubleshoot this issue? We have an Exchange 2010 environment and we have a 2013 environment, regardless if they are on the same network or not. When you initiate the public folder migration, it kickstarts it and starts migrating, but when you look into the network packages, there's a lot of waits. The 2.13 is just basically waiting to get some data, and the 2.10 is waiting to get some confirmation.
So this is all on-premise? There's no O365, right?
Yeah, that is correct.
Okay. I mean, generally, you're starting with the right place, which is if you think that, okay, well, it is looks like networking issues. So what is the wait state happening in this particular scenario, right? Why, when you're sending the packet, where the delay is coming from at the network level, right? And if you're seeing that the packets are not getting acknowledged from 2013, I'm assuming that's what you're saying.
No,
right?
none whatsoever. The packages are, the packages that are sent by 2.10 right. are received by 2.13, right. and they're acknowledged.
Okay.
But there's a lot of waits in okay. between the data package being sent. So in other words, okay. it sends the right. first one, and then there's okay. a lot of wait before okay. the second one gets sent.
Okay, so in this particular scenario, I will look into the processes that are basically responsible for processing those packets up in the application stack. So you're looking into the vertically at this point. Vertically doesn't seem like any problem, or horizontally doesn't seem a problem. So let's look into the stack that is the application layer, including, you know, you're looking into the system.net and further up the application that is supposed to process that one and figure out what that application is doing. There is tracing available that we can look to figure out what is the application actually doing. Is it really, you know, waiting on something, or is it there's a, some type of locking that's taking place, what it is. So based on what you have suggested to me, I think it's, you already looked into the network layer. It doesn't look like there is anything. Everything looks clean. Let's look vertically to figure out all the layers that we have, starting from the .NET framework, system.net, to figure out how the packets are getting into the system.net, and then from there, how does it pass up the information via buffers to the application, and how does the application is processing. Now, this will be a little, I mean, you can look into the tracing and start collecting some information available, but I would, have you opened the, talk to any of people in Microsoft and support?
Yeah, we have contacted okay. the Microsoft locally.
Okay. So, I mean, I will be at the booth later today after the session. So we can talk further on this thing, but basically you have to look vertically in this particular situation to find out what is the tracing shows you. And there is tons of tracing, there's tons of information out there that we can start analyzing to see what it is. And you have an isolated environment, so that's good. We can do some tracing and, you know, put some load on the server to figure out what's going on.
Sure, no problem. I contact you.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you. Go to this side.
Hey, quick question. Does the health checker script that you have, does that work on 2010 as well?
Yes. Yes. You can run your 2010 as well. Yes.
Follow-up question. Yeah. Can I get a USB stick?
Sure. Yeah.
Come on up.
Why not? Yeah. Go this side. Yes, sir.
So if you don't participate in the customer feedback program or the customer improvement thing, right. does the Watson 499 error still get generated and logged in the event log?
Yes. Yes, the only thing that does not get up is it get uploaded to the Watson site. Basically, what happened is that once you enable that one, it aggregated, so we know that how many millions of hits is getting hit, you know. And we right. get the information from there. It also generates a mini dump, Watson dump, basically, that get also uploaded. So a lot of time, if you have uploaded that information up there in the Watson, we really don't have to get any information from you. We already have that call stacks and some of the information there, and we can... Okay. analyze the stuff, but we may not be able to solve it. We may have to get a full dump, but generally we get more information through that route.
Okay. Yep. And the second question, do you recommend clearing out old ActiveSync devices from a user? Like if I had my iPhone 3, my 4, 4S, 5, 5, 6, is there any performance hit to leaving those objects sitting in there, or is it okay to leave them there forever?
I mean, generally I would say if you're not using those devices, clean out, you know, the stuff, because anything that is lingering, it has a performance, you know, penalty, you know, with it, you know. Because even if you have all of those devices, they're not doing anything, any type of query that you're going to run, any type of things that you're going to do, it's going to bring all of this information. So, I mean, it's better to clean up this stuff. I don't know how we do it in the
office. Is there a good automated way to do that?
I know a way. Cause I got you.
All right. You got the help right there.
I got
a stick for you, too. Okay.
For both of us?
Yeah, you can both have it. Absolutely. Come on up, guys.
Go over here.
So I've got a question for the perf guy here. You know, I use the Exchange calculator quite
give
often.
One to him.
And, you know, I always go to the SpecInt site, look up what I need and whatnot. I was just curious as to why was SpecInt 2006 chosen, and is there going to be a change to that, or is it going to stay on that moving forward?
Sure. So reason that was chosen is that that particular benchmark is a relatively good indicator of relative performance across different processors and processor families. And from a sizing perspective, obviously, you know, not all processors are equal. You can't just look at the clock speed of a given processor or a given processor core to determine what it's capable of. So we needed a broadly available benchmark that is, you know, well updated. By vendors on an ongoing basis that we could point to basically indicate what that relative performance is in a way that we can then apply some math to actually produce results. That was really the option that was available. As long as we continue to see vendors submitting results into that benchmark for the hardware platforms that you're going to be deploying Exchange on, there's no reason we would change. Use some other benchmark.
Thank you.
Yep,
we are running low on time. I think we it says please wrap up. So what we will do is that we will step outside the room, and we can take the rest of the questions over there. And there is some additional information here in terms of relevant sessions that you can look into. There's also a list of resources. The slide deck is available. The recording will be available for you to go look through. And of course, if you want to be part of the TAP program, there's information on that one as well, you know. And the last but not least is that, you know, please do the review or, you know, your eval, you know, to provide that thing.